Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is June 3rd, 2014. And today I have with me from the field on location, Dave Hamilton.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for making the time to join us today, because I know how busy your schedule is.
Yeah, it's always crazy out here, but it's a good kind of crazy. I like it.
That's awesome. And also, Brian Chaffin. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. So yesterday was the keynote event at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. We talked about some of the announcements from the event yesterday. And now, Dave, since you're here, I thought it would be cool to be able to get some of your perspective, considering that you've actually been right there on location.
Sure. Yeah, it's been interesting. I was at the keynote, and then after that, they changed the name, but it's the State of the Union kind of thing for developers, with much more geeky stuff happening in there. And so I got to see, I guess they call it the platform State of the Union. So I got to see that too. The contents of that, the actual stuff they show is technically under NDA, although Apple's NDA has loosened up quite a bit this year, which is another good thing. But it's interesting to see all the stuff that Apple's doing, as well as the reactions of people in general. I got to talk on Bloomberg yesterday afternoon with Corey Johnson, and then obviously talking with a lot of developers, and I've just been talking with a lot of different people with lots of different knowledge levels and interest levels in this stuff. And it's fascinating to see how some of this stuff is interpreted and misinterpreted by the people with varying interest levels. So
that is interesting. So you did Bloomberg yesterday. I was on NPR affiliate WOSU this morning, and I found it interesting the way they were interpreting some of the announcements that would be different from, say, the way you would being there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but there's a clear thing to me, and I realized as I was coming into this that I have the show from yesterday, the observation show, queued up, but I actually haven't listened. So forgive me if I'm rehashing something, but it's clear that Apple is not afraid, and B, actually backing off of several things that were clearly visions and directions dictated by Steve Jobs, specifically iCloud Drive being one of them, right? Where, you know, finally giving applications the ability on iOS to access documents created by other applications without having some sort of disastrous, weird, back behind the scenes handshake that, you know, it goes around the sandbox and all of that. That's huge, right? And we've wanted that for a long time. And it wasn't Apple's typical iCloud Drive with, okay, we're going to allow a little bit of this and see how you use it, and then maybe we'll do more. It was, okay, we're going to give you iCloud Drive, which has been there all along, but not accessible in this way. And also anything from any other cloud storage provider that wants to write, an extension to build in here. So, I mean, they showed Box and Microsoft's OneDrive. They did not show an extension from Dropbox, but don't misinterpret that to mean that Dropbox isn't going to be there. I'm guessing Dropbox would write an extension for this so that they can be there. But here's the thing. They don't even have to. Any programmer, and I say this, you know, with an asterisk, obviously, any programmer that knows how to do it, but anyone could write a Dropbox plugin for this. It's not just Dropbox. Anybody could do it. You just authenticate using Dropbox's open APIs and you're done, right? So this is fairly trivial. I don't want to downplay the work that people do, but this is not a difficult thing. So really any service, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see one built for, you know, accessing your private cloud on like your, you know, CloudStation or BitTorrent sync for that matter, right? I mean, maybe all this stuff is possible.
Transporter.
Transporter could be there too, right? Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but that backs way off of Jobs's vision in many, many ways, right? Right. And one of those ways I sort of glossed over, I mean, it backs off his vision in terms of accessing files, which is great, I think, as a user, but it also backs off his vision in terms of the whole extensibility thing. I mean, that's one piece of it, but allowing extensions to change the functionality or augment the functionality of Apple's applications and even the core OS is something we've had on the Mac for a long time. There was in various places it's met with I wouldn't say lack of approval from Apple, but certainly in some places lack of support from Apple, and it's never been available on iOS, and now it's totally available on iOS. Well, that totally is wrong. I don't think we have extensions for mail on iOS yet. I think it's just system-wide Safari. But the door was open pretty wide, especially considering that we're dealing with Apple. This is a new Apple, very much so.
Clearly.
Yeah. So I don't know how much of that I rehashed from what you guys talked about yesterday, but that's there's definitely that sentiment of, hey, we're going to do the things that we think are the right things for our users, despite what our founder said specifically about this, you know, years ago.
That's not a lot of rehash at all, Dave, but I will rehash something I said, and that was that I think that extensions greatly reduce the amount of suck associated with sandboxing.
That's a very succinct way of saying that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because it allows additional functionality. I mean,
yes.
I could not use mail on my Mac, Apple's mail on my Mac, without extensions. Now, Apple does not make it easy for the developers of those extensions. They don't offer them a whole lot of support. There's no published APIs, but they also don't get in their way. They don't stop those from happening. And they make mail functional for me.
And we called ourselves lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, maybe that'll change, though, right? I mean, maybe this is kind of a new realization washing through Apple of, hey, people are making smart stuff. They make it responsibly. We can provide some frameworks for them to do it and support them to do it so that they really can't break things too bad, right? That's been the whole problem. I have no doubt that was Jobs's hesitation with any of this stuff, is because as soon as you start extending pieces of software, you're introducing the possibility for that piece of software to malfunction or crash or worse, right? Lose data, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Apple really prides itself on maintaining the whole user experience at the expense of some of this additional functionality. And now that, you know, that's loosened up. That's good.
It's the best of, I think it's the best of all possible worlds, the way they're doing this.
We'll see.
I mean, we're going to get, we can have Text Expander be a system-wide thing now, like it should have been able to be the whole time.
As a keyboard, that's right.
All of...
But that's still a hack. See, that's where it comes in, though, right? Because, yes, it is now possible. Previously, it was impossible for something like Text Expander to be available system-wide. Now, via Apple's custom keyboards, it is possible for something like Text Expander to be live. Now, they'll have to create their own keyboard that mimics Apple's, and then,
But you won't have to do... Text Expander wouldn't have to be just a keyboard. Extensions work... keyboards are just one aspect of extensions.
Correct, but keyboards are the only aspect that would allow Text Expander to do what you would want it to do on iOS.
Are you 100% on that?
Absolutely. Okay. That is the only extension option. There's no other text input extension. The keyboard is the only one. So if you want to use Text Expander, but you also like, say, the SwiftKey keyboard, right, that's real popular on Android and now obviously coming to iOS, you have to pick one or the other.
Or Smile has to get SwiftKey to use their own APIs.
Exactly. Right. And that's totally possible. But that's not like it is on the Mac, where Text Expander sits at the layer between the keyboard and, you know, your cursor, effectively. I mean, it's not exactly what it does, but as far as the user's concerned, that's what it does. and sits where it should sit. That layer does not exist or is not exposed. Of course it exists, but is not exposed to third-party developers on iOS. So they have to hack it. And the keyboard is a hack. But it was the first thing I thought of. It was like, hey, finally, I can have text expander, you know. But something like 1Password, however, finally now with a Safari plugin, that is totally exactly what they would want to be able to do. In theory, I mean, you know, they haven't coded it yet, but honestly, it would not surprise me to see a beta of something. I don't know if they're going to release it publicly. I haven't talked to them about this, but the amount of code that the folks at 1Password would have to do to get a functional test version of 1Password for Safari for iOS is probably pretty trivial given all the work they've already done. You have full access to the DOM, the document object model inside Safari, and they've already done all that work on the Mac. So they just need to kind of put it in the right box on iOS and start testing it. Whether it would work perfectly by tomorrow, probably not, but it would be something that they could, you know, get rolling pretty quickly, which is cool.
I'm betting there are developers at Agile that have been hard at work trying that out already.
You don't have to bet. Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't have to bet. I totally get where you're going with that. Okay, there's another thing Brian, that you pointed out that I found to be really interesting out of the keynote, and that's the way Apple seems to be positioning itself against Google, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, so I'm about halfway through a piece on this. It's taking a lot of rewatching of the keynote to get everything in place that I want to say. But there were several shots across Google's bow for search, starting with the Yosemite demonstration and the Safari demonstration in Yosemite, where actually we have Spotlight and Safari, but when Safari was being demonstrated, for instance, one of the things that we saw was when you click on what is now the search field instead of the URL field in Safari, you get a drop-down pop-up of all of your favorite websites. Now, there are a quick poll. If you're going to go to a website, one, especially one that you're familiar with, do you guys type out the URL or do you go and search for the company in Google?
I just type out the URL.
I do the same thing. I type it and it's auto completed because I've been there recently enough and I just hit enter.
Sure. Right. There are lots of folks who go and search for the company every single time.
Yep. It's true.
And it's fascinating to me, but I mean, there must be some kind of reason for it. Apple is taking that step, is making that step unnecessary even for those people who do that with that little drop-down menu. Yeah, the favorites bar has always been there, but this is a sort of visual reminder that there's my website, there's my icon, I can click on it, I don't need to go search. Well, that's actually taking away some search from Google. Then Apple is also giving for quote-unquote common search terms, and Dave, perhaps you have some insight on that. Common search terms give what Apple thinks you may be looking for above, on top of, before Google's autocomplete suggestions.
Well, so I had a question about that, and I don't have the answer yet, Brian, but when I saw that, my question was, from where are they getting those predictive terms, right? Because Google will do that if you're searching at Google, right? And Safari does that now, where it starts giving you terms, and those terms are being fed by Google.
So what I gathered was that these are terms from Apple. I don't think that they're being licensed from Bing or Yahoo or Google. I believe that these are things that Apple, of course, Apple has a lot of search data on the things that we search. If for devices that report back to Apple, right? And I think that Apple is the one that's deciding this. I think
I don't think so.
I absolutely think so.
Well, let me tell you why I don't think so. Because Apple doesn't run a search engine. Now, maybe they are going to, right? But without running a search engine, how are you possibly going to have up to the minute information that will accurately enough do the predictive thing to make it useful for people? For example, right? If during the keynote yesterday, someone was, and I realize I'm putting the cart before the horse, but just bear with me, right? During the keynote yesterday, someone's on, you know, the beta of OS 10.10.10. They have all this great search and they type in OS 10 space Y, right? Now, in theory, Google already, people are already posting on the web about Yosemite. And so Yosemite is going to be the thing that autofills. Is Apple also indexing everything on the web in order to be predictive about that? Or are they just going to they're going to leverage what the search engines are doing, which is what Apple has always done. So I don't know that that takes away from Google. And that's why I think that.
Well, unless they're licensing that information from Google, which is certainly a possibility. I don't think that's the case. But unless Apple is licensing it from Google, by popping up some kind of information that they think that we want, if we click on it, we're not going to Google to get that information.
Now, and Apple made a point to mention Bing during the keynote, but not Google.
That's probably just politics there.
Right. Sure.
Right. Of course. DuckDuckGo, you know, has been added as a search option, which I think is awesome.
It is awesome.
Yep, because that's secure. It doesn't track you. It's great. So it's nice to see them giving a nod to that. I don't think it'll become, you know, popular at all among Mac users, but it's nice to see.
We're also getting some of these Spotlight suggestions because, by the way, these are called Spotlight suggestions.
Right.
And Spotlight is effectively being branded within Safari. And Spotlight is also now being branded on iPhone. The pull-down search in iOS 7 is called, I think, iPhone search. And in the screenshot for iOS 8 that was in the keynote, it's called Spotlight search. Right? And this feature is called Spotlight suggestions. It's not called Spotlight suggestions powered by Google. It's not called...
Yeah.
It's not called anything else. It's called Spotlight Suggestions. That's part of why I think that this is some kind of Apple thing. And Apple doesn't have to index the internets to know this stuff. What Apple does have to do instead is know what people are searching for and designating common search terms from that standpoint. So it's kind of like reverse. Yep. Reverse the indexing the internet.
Yeah, right. Interrupts. Right.
So the other thing is we had we have Spotlight suggestions in Safari. We have Spotlight suggestions in Spotlight itself, all of which are things that can take away from Google search. And then we have the other crack was how each and every one of our keyboard strokes stays with the device, that they're protecting our privacy. That was an absolute shot at Google. Because Google is taking everything that we do on any kind of Google property and putting that into their profile of us. And I think that Apple we also have to go back to Siri. When Siri was first introduced, we were told that where Siri was going to specialize was in local search, finding a restaurant, finding movie theater tickets, getting sports scores, things like that. And that this was 80, according to Apple at the time, this was 80% of what people did searches for in the first place.
Sure.
So now Spotlight is very specifically targeting these things, not just in the spoken form when you're talking to Siri, but when you're doing a search in Safari in either iOS or Yosemite. And I think all of this is about pulling some of a big chunk of what Apple supplies to Google's search revenues in terms of its users.
Now, I think we'll be able to tell more about how this impacts Google when it's okay for everyone to go hands-on with these new versions of the operating system. And I'm really curious to see whether or not your impression on that changes after we can start playing with it, Brian.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I think on that note, it's time to wrap up. And Dave, thank you for taking time out of your incredibly busy WWDC schedule to join us today. I really appreciate that.
Dude, it's my pleasure. I'm happy. Yeah, it's great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure thing. And Brian, thank you for coming on. It's always a blast getting to talk with both of you.
Thanks.